court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
How are you doing today, Tommy?
Well, not too bad. We've had quite an eventful last couple weeks in the country.
Yeah, you could say that again. bit of turmoil.
Yeah, a lot of turmoil. A lot of things to think about and a lot of things that are challenges that we all must overcome.
That's true. We figured this would be a good episode to talk about freedom of assembly, given what took place in Charlottesville with all the craziness that went down there.
And what a beautiful town for that to happen in. I can remember one time going and picking up our nephew Charles at before a Thanksgiving when he was going to school there. And many of the places that I saw in the news were places that he took me around to while I was there. I spent a night there with him and in his dorm room, and he took me around campus, and then I brought him back home for Thanksgiving that year.
I remember visiting Charles at UVA too, and I think I was in high school at the time, and the thing that really struck me about it was the fact there were pizza boxes everywhere in his dorm room, and I asked him about it, and he said, oh, well, you can order pizza here, and it's like $5 for a pizza. I'm like, $5 for a pizza?
What a deal!
I'm really looking forward to college.
That was the thing that made the biggest impression on you, huh?
Oh, that's what I remember. I mean, I remember the fact that cheap pizza in college. This is great.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a beautiful town. Charlottesville is a beautiful town, and it's just a shame that something like this had to happen there.
Well, I know Tommy and I typically try to, whenever we're discussing issues, especially issues that are super polarizing, that we try to not really come down and give our opinions on it too much. We just kind of talk about it from a content point of view with some light opinions, but we don't really get into it too much. So I think that's what we're going to try to do this episode, aren't we?
Yeah, it may be tough, but here's the thing. The way I feel about this isn't a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. This is an American issue. I mean, what kind of people do we want to become? There's just some questions that come up, and I know that there's freedom of speech, and I think that's a timely topic for us to cover. Why can these things take place in this day and age? And yes, we have, you know, what our forefathers laid forth, and I just think that it's a good discussion to have, because a lot of people are questioning how come people were allowed to go forth and spew this kind of venom, and it's okay.
There's a phrase out there, and it says, I do not agree with what you have to say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. And that's kind of, I think, the way America has always viewed free speech and freedom to assembly, is that just because we might not agree with what you have to say, we'll defend it. But I think there probably does come a certain point where maybe taken to the extreme, I don't know if you can still justify that. And I think that's kind of where a lot of people are falling with regard to this whole Charlottesville thing, is that, well, maybe we don't like this whole free speech thing so much when it comes to certain things.
Well, and it's not like it's the only part of the law. As we've talked about, there's a lot of areas of law that are changing or being reinterpreted due to technology.
Yeah.
Well, why can't our society and the life that we are living and the kind of country we want to be and the kind of people we want to be, that may be evolving as well, to where we don't want to be the kind of society that certain things are allowed to do. We have to move forward. And some things, even though they may be, I guess it's like we used to always say on the railroad, when somebody would say, why do we do things this way? Well, that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
That's not a good reason, just because you've always done it that way.
Well, the basis for all this is, again, the First Amendment. And I'll read the First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So basically, we're kind of talking about two different things here. One, freedom of speech, and the interplay with the right of the people to peaceably assemble. So that's the basis where you're looking at these demonstrations and things like that. That's where these protections come from, is this First Amendment. So the first thing that jumps out to me when I read that is the right of the people to peaceably assemble. So I think that in this situation where these people were coming to demonstrate and whatnot, I mean, they had weapons, they had shields, they had masks, it seemed like there was a lot of people ready there to get in some sort of fight or skirmish.
Well, that group from, what was it, Vice Magazine or something like that, that was interviewing some of these white nationalists or whatever they identified themselves as, they said, yes, they were prepared for violence and they were actually looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know that they were actually would get any protections under the First Amendment, because I don't think they were there to peaceably assemble, first of all.
Well, and as Tina Fey described them, they were chinless turds with semi-automatic weapons.
Was that the whole cake thing that she did?
Right.
I didn't see that.
Oh, you got to see it. Yeah. It was fantastic.
And I only watched 10 minutes of the Vice thing. So unfortunately, this week was really, really busy for me. So, well, maybe it was a good thing, but I wasn't able to really keep up with all the news as much as I would have liked or probably should have.
Well, I DVR'd that special summertime weekend update, and it's just 30 minutes that they do. Mm-hmm. I DVR'd it, so you'll have to watch that sometime. It was absolutely, I mean, it was great. Whatever side you're on comedically, if you can, you know, laugh at something like this,
yeah,
it was just great.
Do you remember in the movie The Blues Brothers?
Oh, yeah. There was a guy that I worked community theater with here that was in The Blues Brothers.
Who's that?
Gene Anthony.
Oh, that's right. Actually, I had him as a professor.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I took an acting theater classroom.
Yeah, he was in the Blues
stage
Brothers.
Stage Movement was the class title, and I took that because, well, number one, I wanted to. I thought it'd be fun. But then also, there was theater fighting that you got to do, like fake fighting.
Right.
And that was fun. But then also, I had to dance, too.
Didn't like that part, huh?
No. Here's the thing. I thought I was really cutting a rug in there. I thought I was doing really well. But Mary had a mutual friend and said something about, well, Michael, he's not much of a dancer.
Oh, that hurt your feelings, huh?
Yeah, I was step ball chaining. Well, I thought it was
freedom of speech. They had the right to say it.
Those are fighting words. Yeah,
but describe the part that Gene Anthony had in that, he's the guy that's in the car with Henry Gibson. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, if you would know who Henry Gibson is, he was a regular on the old Rowan and Martin Laugh-In. But when they drove off the bridge, plummeting into the river or whatever, Gene Anthony was one in the car with Henry Gibson that said, "I've always loved you," or whatever.
Right.
Of that effect.
So he was one of the Illinois Nazis.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Well, that's the group that I was going to refer to when I was talking about the Blues Brothers. Is there's a scene where the Nazi party is protesting, and basically what happens is they get in the way of the Blues Brothers, and they kind of speed past the traffic and run them all off this bridge, and they all dive into the bridge, which starts this whole subplot of the Nazis trying to get revenge on the Blues Brothers throughout the whole movie. So they say one thing at one point, Illinois Nazis, or something like that. But the reason I brought that up is because that's actually based in part from some real life facts and real life events that took place. Did you know that?
In the Blues Brothers?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's a case from 1978, and it was the National Socialist Party of America versus the Village of Skokie. Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard the song, "I'm Proud to Be an Okie from Muskokie."
You never heard of this case before?
I think I have heard of it.
Well, basically, the Village of Skokie, Illinois, had a population of about 70,000 people, and 40,500 approximately were Jewish. It was a very large Jewish population.
Yes.
And most of them...
Nearly half.
Yeah. I'm not good with math, but yes. Maybe more than half. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was a substantial amount of the population was Jewish. And back in 78, there were still quite a few Holocaust survivors living at that time. And you know, they had survived the Holocaust and were living here. And
well, I think they said 1 in 6 citizens of that city were Holocaust survivors.
Yeah. So there was a man named Frank Collin, and he was the leader of the Nazi Party of America.
Illinois Nazis.
And he informed Skokie's police chief that they wanted to march on the sidewalk on May 1st. What happened was that Skokie said, no, we don't. Well, I think probably they didn't just say no, but they were like, you know what? We don't want to let them have this march here. These are Illinois Nazis. We are a largely Jewish town. And the only reason they're coming here to protest is because they're basically using this as a guise to just taunt us and aggravate us, I think, is pretty much the way I read between the lines on that. What do you think?
Well, and in that time, of course, they didn't have it identified like they do now, but you had people probably that were suffering from PTSD as a result of Nazi actions that they lived through. And so now you have people marching through in Nazi uniforms, bearing swastikas and stuff. And they're saying there'd be very real physical and emotional reactions by people that witnessing this. So it wouldn't be like just a peaceful demonstration. Their whole purpose was to incite hatred and bigotry.
So Colin, the Frank Colin leader of the Nazi Party of America, he wrote a letter basically saying the purpose of the demonstration was to protest Skokie Park District's ordinance requiring a bond of $350,000 to be posted prior to the issuance of a park permit. And he also stated that the demonstration would consist of 30 to 50 demonstrators marching in a single file in front of the Skokie Village Hall. And the demonstrators intended to wear uniforms similar to those traditionally worn by Nazis, including swastika armbands. Colin stated that the demonstrators would not make any derogatory public statements and would cooperate reasonably with police instructions. So the district court...
So he said all the right things.
He did. Yeah, I mean...
But who believes him? They're Nazis. You can't believe Nazis.
If it's one thing I've learned from watching Indiana Jones movies...
Don't trust the Nazis.
Don't trust the Nazis. So the village of Skokie filed a motion for a preliminary injunction in the district court of Cook County, where the village of Skokie is located. And as you were talking, one resident testified that a number of Jewish organizations planned counter demonstrations for the same day and expected an attendance of 12 to 15,000 people. And that basically, with the appearance of these Nazi demonstrators there, that could lead to violence. The mayor also basically testified that the demonstration could lead to uncontrollable violence. And the court basically said, you know what, we're going to enter an order which enjoins the Nazi party from marching, walking, parading, or displaying swastikas on or off their person on that date. So they basically appealed that, and it went to the Illinois Supreme Court, and they denied the petition as well. They said, no, we agree with the circuit court. Or the district.
This is not a good idea.
Not a good idea. So they filed an application for stay, and then they petitioned for writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. So they followed. They said the right things. They jumped through all the right hoops and appealed it and appealed it. So.
And it was also, if I understood it right, they had to kind of rush this thing through these different levels because. Otherwise, the date would come and go, and they wouldn't have been allowed to do their march. So it's not like you could just put it off and stay it so that then the time goes by, and then it's too late.
Right, because at that point, that would be grounds for one of these appeals to be denied because it would be called what's moot,
right.
Mootness. So
now, what really was...
And the other let me, before you get into that, the other theory on mootness is ripeness.
So ripeness?
Ripeness.
Ripeness?
So
like
had,
a banana?
Like a banana. If they had not actually filed... for a petition or for a permit to be able to do this, but then they wanted to have some sort of court hearing saying they had the right to do it without having been denied at first, the court would not hear that because they say it's not ripe.
Yeah. So you got to get turned down before you can say it's not fair.
Yeah. So those are two hand in hand issues. They're ripeness and mootness. So
I think the thing that struck me about it is that these Nazis were defended by the ACLU.
They were. That was one of the most unpopular positions the ACLU has ever taken, and it cost them a lot of membership.
And I can just say, I mean, now, this is just on the outside looking in, and I have no dealings with the ACLU. I just read about things. But I always think about them as a group of flaming liberals who want to take up the cause for the little guy and fight racism and bigotry and stuff like this. And now they're forced to protect Nazis and their right to do this, they got to throw up in their mouth a little bit every time they have to say anything to defend these guys. I mean, you know, there's just no way that they're thrilled about having to do this. And the guy that gets assigned this, I mean, probably the boss at the ACLU doesn't like him, because nobody wants to be the guy to defend these Nazis, I wouldn't think.
No, I mean, that would be one of those cases I don't think I'd want to take.
No.
I don't think I could actually do it.
I mean, it would be hard. They would almost have to hold me in contempt to do that or something, because it would be hard to stand up and do it. I guess I understand the position, and I guess that's what makes this country great.
Well, that's exactly what I said with that quote to begin with. I may not respect your opinion, but I will fight to the death for your ability to say it.
Yeah, and you don't want to be like other countries where you can't speak out against the government or the way things are being done or something like that, or you have a state-run newspaper or television station that's only telling you the things they want you to hear. We certainly don't want to get to that. But when it comes to things like this that are on the other, completely other side, it's just a lot to have to swallow.
Yeah, I don't want to swallow any Nazi stuff. So, well, anyway, they went to the Supreme Court, and basically the court pretty much sided with the Nazis, and they said that Illinois must provide strict procedural safeguards, including appellate review, and to deny a stay for injunction depriving the Nazi Party of protected First Amendment rights. The court treated the Illinois Supreme Court denial of a stay as a final judgment, and basically the court treated their application for stay as a petition for writ of certiorari, and the court reversed and remanded the case for further proceedings and said that, hey, you know what, they do pretty much have a right here, and you need to analyze this on the First Amendment grounds. So, which basically was the crux of it, meant is that they were going to have the right to do it. And as kind of the march actually never took place in Skokie, but there was a compromise kind of worked out where the Nazis agreed to march in Chicago rather than in Skokie.
Well, I think they originally wanted to march in Chicago, and that was where the permit was too high cost or something like that. So then they moved it to Skokie. And I think you're right, as a settlement to try to get the whole thing so it wouldn't be so bad, they moved it back to Chicago.
Yeah.
We had a more diverse population. It wasn't so aimed. I mean, that seems pretty focused when you have a community that has that high of a Jewish population, and then you march a bunch of Nazis through there. That seems very purposeful to cause a problem.
Yeah, no doubt. The one good thing that came from this, and free speech and freedom to assembly was protected, so I mean, I guess that's kind of a good thing, even though it leaves a bad Nazi taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
The survivors that were in Skokie from the Holocaust, they basically said that despite the fact that they wanted to leave the past behind, they could no longer remain silent about it. And some Chicago area survivors joined together, and they built a Holocaust Memorial Foundation of Illinois. So they kind of formed a new group they wanted to combat hate with education. So that was kind of the good side of it.
Well, and here's what I understand that it came down to. There was three main arguments, and that was that they didn't agree with him about it's not on the ground that the swastika doesn't promote religious hatred, but on the grounds that it is not a reason for suppressing speech. If the Nazis could be prohibited from marching in Skokie because the swastika incites religious hatred, then presumably they couldn't march anywhere for the same reason.
Yeah.
And they said not only that, the swastika couldn't appear in news reports or in movies or anything like that. Now, I don't really agree with that, because there's a difference in marching down the street, displaying swastikas, and pushing forth these bigoted notions that actually are singling people out and saying these people are not on the same level as the rest of us, and watching a documentary or watching a movie where it's historical and these are the people that are fighting against. I mean, we're not going to change history and say Germany never had Nazis. Nobody's saying that's what we want to do. What we're saying is there are no place for Nazis in our American society.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a completely different thing. So I don't really agree with them on that same thing. It's just like the Ku Klux Klan. They're saying you could never have historical things or documentaries that depict what happened, you know, movies that would depict what happened. These are things that we have to learn from. You know, the old saying, those who do not learn from their history are doomed to repeat it. We don't want these things to go away where nobody knows about them. What we want them to do is learn from them, and they know about them, and they make things better, and we don't make the same mistakes that were made before. You know, even the Germans don't allow Nazis.
Yeah, well, the German law, which I was going to talk about here in a little bit, is very, very prohibitive of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty serious offense. So there's also some pretty good quotes that came from some leaders during that time that I want to get into, but I think there might be some motions before we get into that.
Yes. Would it be permissible at this time to approach the bench to pay for court costs?
Go ahead. Approach the bench. Who do we have on the docket?
Well, the first one on the docket, backed by popular demand, is our good friends from DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com has provided me, by far, the smoothest and best shave I've ever had. I find their razor and their razor blades and their shaving butter to be superior to any others I have ever tried.
I can agree with you. And despite the fact that I've decided to grow my beard back out.
Again? Man.
You can tell, can't you? I mean, I'm looking pretty beardy, aren't I?
Yeah, you were getting there. I didn't know if you just hadn't shaved for a week. You've been too busy. You said you've been busy. I thought maybe that's what it was.
No, but I mean, you still need to trim up and keep those hairs in order on your face. Even if you're growing a beard, you can't go full Grizzly Adams. And that's why Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. It keeps those, even if you have a beard, keeps those other hairs in line.
Yeah, you don't want to be like those guys with the beards where they have it braided down in the front, you know, like a braid hanging down off your chin.
Talk about beard. Neck beards?
Yeah, you don't want one of those.
Those are Vikings.
Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. You get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door.
It's an awesome life hack and a no-brainer choice. No need to schlep to the store to buy cheap disposable razors that give you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with some sort of gimmicky shaving technique that you don't need.
And when I use my Dollar Shave Club executive razor with their Dr. Carver shave butter, the blade just gently glides and gives me such a smooth shave. The Dr. Carver shave butter is transparent for a more precise shave and helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps.
I'll tell you what, the Dr. Carver shave butter really comes in handy too if you do have some sort of facial hair. Because you put that on there, and you can actually see where the hair is. So you're not going to make a mistake and actually shave off part of your precious goatee or precious beard by accident.
Yeah, because you can't put it back on. If you shave that one side too short, then you got to shave the other side too.
Well, you can glue it back on, but
that wouldn't look good.
No, you want to look good. So right now, for a limited time, new members get their first month with the Executive Razor with a tube of the Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors just a few bucks a month.
That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at the regular price.
There are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like.
You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/court.
Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
Well, next up, who do we have?
Next up, Mike, is a new one. We have another podcast from Audio Boom that is looking for us to promote their podcast for those that may be interested in legal things.
Audio Boom.
Audio Boom.
So this new podcast is called Deliberation. And let me give you a little summary of what the show is about. It's the first dramatically improvised courtroom drama to enter the podcast sphere. Deliberations launches with 3 episodes on August 16th. Deliberations takes you inside the jury room of a highly publicized erotic murder trial. By employing improvisation in the storytelling, Deliberations creates an authentic environment for jurors to find a verdict. By asking hard questions about ambiguous circumstances, it holds up a lens to our criminal justice system. Created and produced by Los Angelian Chelsea Cox, Deliberations begs the question, where's the line drawn between consent and murder?
Deliberations brings listeners inside the salacious murder trial of dominatrix Samantha Hall. Hall is charged with killing her submissive lover, Troy Singer, by ordering him to asphyxiate with a rope. as the press sensationalizes the case, jurors pass judgment on the BDSM lifestyle as probed and explored in graphic psychological detail by experts on the stand. Renowned Los Angeles dominatrix Justine Cross guest stars on episode 2, which delves deeper into the dom/sub dynamic. Jurors learn about the surprising history of erotic asphyxiation, probe the victim's submissive psyche, and challenge one another's preconceptions. Themes of tolerance and feminism permeate the tense discussions, but everything ultimately hinges on the question, did Samantha want Troy dead?
You're going to have to listen to deliberations to find out.
That's right. Or you're going to have to deliberate afterwards and figure it out for yourself. I'm not sure. We've got to listen and find out about that. But
it's on Audio Boom, so you can find it there, as well as a lot of other quality podcasts like The Politics Guys that we talked about last week. That's a really good podcast. If you want to get some good information, talk about political debate, that's the place to go. It's not partisanship, and it's really smart. So check it out.
It's good back and forth for your liberal or your right politics.
But back about deliberations, I noticed in when we were talking about it, a couple things. First of all, probed. That word was used several times.
That's an erotic case.
And also, if they're going to have experts in court, are they going to be sexperts?
Well, I've never seen a diploma on their wall.
So, as I was saying before the break, before we had to pay court costs, there were some quotes about the Illinois Nazis that came out that I thought were kind of interesting. One was by President Jimmy Carter, and by all accounts, I lived through Carter's presidency, but not with anybody who had a political opinion of what he was doing, so I mainly know him from his...
Peanut farm or his brother's beer?
Well, I've seen a can of his brother's beer. It was pretty impressive, but I know him basically from his post-presidential career, which has been pretty prolific. I mean, he's one of those guys who is kind of an ambassador of peace and has really... worked hard, I think, after his presidency to try to work make the world a better place. So I kind of respect his opinion for that. I don't know anything about his politics or really what was going on when he was in office, but for the stuff I've seen after he was out of office, I think he does a pretty good job. But anyway, he said, I must respect the decision of the Supreme Court allowing this group, the Nazis, to express their views, even when those views are despicable and ugly as they are in this case. But if such views must be expressed, I am pleased they will not go unanswered. That is why I want to voice my complete solidarity with those citizens of Skokie and Chicago who will gather Sunday in peaceful demonstration of the abhorrence of Nazism. So.
All right.
I thought that was a pretty good quote. You know, I think it kind of touches on the fact that even if this is being allowed, that, you know, that's okay, but we should come out on the other side. And that's maybe what America's all about. Everybody's able to have their opinion, one side or the other. But the thing is, it's got to be peaceful.
Well, and another quote that came out of that was Justice Louis Brandeis. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say that?
Yep.
He said, "The framers of our First Amendment knew that fear breeds repression, that repression breeds hate, that hate menaces stable government, that the path of safety lies in the opportunity to discuss freely supposed grievances and proposed remedies, and that the fitting remedy for evil counsels is good one." They're saying basically, if you can't talk about it, if you can't feel free to talk about it, then it's still going to be underlying and fester and grow and come out in ways that will undermine the government.
Yeah. Which, you know, hey, pull the sheets out, pull the sheets off. let's expose it.
Yeah. Well, and if that was what it is, it's a free expression of ideas. That's one thing. But I really question a free expression of ideas, what that is. I mean, if you're saying, you know, we believe that this type of law should be enacted or anything, you know, that this would make it better for people, that this would be more fair, that's one thing. But when you're saying we're better than others, these type of people are filthy people and that we need to get rid of them and they aren't on the same level as we are, this nation, while we do have the First Amendment, it was also based on all men are created equal. And I don't believe that you can go up and preach we're more equal than they are and that you're protected to do that, because that violates the very basis that our country was founded on.
you talked about Germany has a law which basically says that you can't even depict Nazism or anything like that.
And they were Nazis, and they don't want it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's probably why, is I think that they recognize that that was such a bad thing. And, I mean, they basically said the Nazi Party is an unconstitutional entity. And
they have strict penalties about displaying Nazi flags or being part of a Nazi party, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
It's not just like it's a bad idea, don't do that. It's not like they come by and say, oh, stop that.
No, they'll stick you in prison.
Yeah.
they don't play around in Germany. And especially don't play around with that in Germany. So I think that's the other side of the coin, is that you either have complete openness like we have here in America, we're supposed to have with freedom to assembly, and you allow all these groups, even though you might not like them, you still allow them. Or you go in the other direction, like Germany did, and just be very authoritarian and say, nope, 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 nope. So, and it's very similar to the Westboro Baptist Church, too. I mean, they protest funerals, and they protest burials of American soldiers who were killed overseas fighting. I mean, you know,
I think that's terrible, too. And I think they have come up with some things where they have to maintain a certain amount of distance.
They have, yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, that's their, as we understand it, that's their right to be able to do that in this country. So, you know, as much as it leaves a bad taste, a bad Westboro Baptist taste in your mouth, as opposed to a bad Nazi taste in your mouth, it's still there and a taste in your mouth, I guess. I don't know.
But they aren't.
I don't want them in my mouth.
What they're doing, though, isn't singling out somebody by race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender, anything like that.
Who's not? Westboro?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they are.
Well, when the soldiers are killed, they're not protesting that. They're not coming over and protesting that because they're over there fighting, right?
No, they have all kinds of stuff. They say that God hates America because America has fags and like all this crazy stuff, and that basically that's the whole reason that God is killing American soldiers over there, is because of our tolerance of homosexuals. And I mean, they're out there. I mean, they're not.
They're saying that America deserves this because they're tolerant of these other lifestyles and stuff.
Yeah, which you think about is kind of funny, is because we're tolerant of them in turn.
Yeah, if anybody needs to go, they do.
Yeah, but no, make no mistake, they are. It's not just like, well, we don't like American soldiers dying overseas. They're like, no, we don't like them, and they have all these reasons why, and it's basically because based on hate of minorities, hate of different sexual orientations, hate of everything. I mean, they hate everyone.
Here's
that's maybe the easiest way. No, they hate everyone.
They hate everybody except their own church members, huh?
I think so, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Which I think they...
Well, I never really understood that. I read about them going around to that, but I thought it had more to do with they were against America being in the war.
Well, the whole family is lawyers as well. And so they sue a lot.
So you think
rights. They're
looking for things just to be able to make their living off of it?
I'm not saying they're a troll, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bridge over top of their house.
Well, if it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's probably a duck, huh? Hmm. Well, you know, what I find interesting, too, is these groups that were marching in Charlottesville, you know, besides being white nationalists, the other thing was they were Nazis, and they were touting their Confederate heritage. Well, okay, so let's take Nazis and the Confederates. They both lost. Yeah. So that's who you want to identify with? Two groups that lost, and not only did they lose their battle, but their ideology was a flawed ideology. I mean, that was in sharp contrast to the way the rest of the world was going. You know, that it was based on making others inferior to yourself. It wasn't based on everyone working together and doing their best. It was based on, you don't belong, you're not as good.
Right. Well,
I want to identify with the losers. Yeah, that's where I want to go.
I don't really want to get into the actual politics of it, of which side you come down on. I mean, I was kind of wanting to talk more just about like the actual freedom to assembly and whatnot. I mean, we have our opinions about it, and I feel pretty strongly about those groups as well, but you know, I don't know. It's one of those tricky ones. I don't know. I'm not saying I disagree with you, Tommy, but I just don't know that I want to talk about it.
Well, I went through and pulled up a couple of other cases that were based on freedom of speech.
Okay.
And this was kind of building towards what my premise is.
Okay.
That I think about this.
Your theory?
Yeah. All right, now this one, and you're probably going to be familiar with several of these because these aren't obscure ones, and I don't know how to say this, but Shinnick versus United States in 1919. That was the one where Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes stated in his famous aphorism about falsely shouting fire in a theater and set forth clear and present danger test to judge whether speech is protected by the First Amendment. The question, he wrote, is whether the words are used in such circumstances and are of such a nature as to create a clear and present danger that they will bring about the substantive evils that Congress has a right to prevent. Is a question of proximity and degree.
Are you talking about like fighting words?
Yes.
The words that basically have no value to society.
Right.
Okay.
So that was where that premise was first set forth. In other words, yes, your freedom is protected until it gets to the point where you shout fire in a crowded theater, and then at that point you are subjecting your fellow citizens to harm. Right. Interpret that right? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. In Minnesota, they passed an ordinance that banned hate speech. Any expression such as burning a cross or swastika that might arouse anger, alarm, or resentment in others on the basis of race, color, religion, or gender. The Supreme Court struck the ordinance down. Now, this was in 1992. The Supreme Court struck the ordinance down as unconstitutionally discriminating based on the content of the expression. The law banned only fighting words that insult based on race, religion, or gender, while abusive invective aimed at someone on the basis of political affiliation or sexual orientation would be permissible. The law thus reflected only the city's special hostility towards certain biases and not others. So in other words, they agreed with them, but it was because they left out other groups that should have been protected.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is we were moving towards the right direction. And the thing here, it wasn't that they came back and said all freedom, all speech was protected. It just says you got to include everybody if you're going to single out what areas you can't discriminate against.
Yeah.
Here was another one. The Communist Party of Indiana versus Whitcomb. This was in 1972. And the Communist Party was wanting to be on the ballot. Now, they had to sign, the state was wanting them to sign a petition that said they do not advocate the overthrow of local, state, or national government by force or violence. Whereas this was written in their policies of what they did, that the Communist Party said that they...
In their manifesto?
Yeah, that they would do that by whatever means necessary.
I think if you're the Communist Party, you don't have a platform, you have a manifesto.
Is that what it is? So they had that in there. So this group would not sign this pledge saying that they didn't do that because, of course, they had literature out there to the contrary.
Yeah.
So they were not allowed on the ballot. Well, it came back. And they said, you have to let them on the ballot. But it wasn't because that the freedom of speech, the reason they did is because they didn't make the Republican and Democratic Party sign this same pledge.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that out there in writing anywhere, so they didn't see the reason to it. So it was just that they were treated unfairly in that.
Well, if you see a theme in a lot of these Supreme Court cases, when you look at this issue and other issues, it's basically equal treatment across the board for all different groups. That's the kind of underlying theme that no matter what case you're looking at, no matter what you're looking at, that is what I think they strive for with regards to constitutional law. Because the Constitution protects us all equally. And, you know, it's the whole equal protection thing, that whole thing.
Well, so what they said in there when they did that, the one justice wrote that they were allowed to under free speech, but they won this 5-4. The one justice said it was because of free speech. The other four that agreed with him, though, just simply said it was because the Republicans and the Democrats weren't forced to sign it, too.
Yeah, so they had a concurring opinion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had one that basically said it's under freedom of speech, but the other four, they agreed with them, but it was for a different reason.
Yeah.
So I think that we're moving towards doing something about it. Now, I saw where recently Columbus... police in Columbus would be directed to recognize white nationalist and neo-Nazi groups as terrorist organizations under a state legislative proposal. The resolution was introduced Thursday by Democratic State Representative David Leland of Columbus. It follows a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, where a woman was killed. The measure would enable law enforcement to pursue such groups' activities and whereabouts with the resources and attention devoted to domestic terrorist groups. Illinois recently passed a similar measure. So, is that a way around freedom of speech? Can you pass those kind of measures and say, we've identified these groups as terrorist groups?
Well, I know the Southern Poverty Law Center has a whole list of groups they identify as hate groups or things like that. So I don't know. I mean, it might be a way around, but then, you know, and this is the whole slippery slope argument.
Slippery slope, yeah.
It's like, well, we don't identify with them, so we're going to ban them. But then, you know, how far do you take that? So, I mean, I hate to be devil's advocate on this, but... And
you're like the ACLU guy throwing up in your mouth a little bit, huh?
A little bit.
But yeah. I just think that the time has come where these things, they are fighting words, and they are yelling fire in a crowded theater. When you stand up and say, we are superior, we're superior because of our color, we're superior because of our, you know, our gender, we're superior because we're heterosexual, whatever it is.
Well, I do have a problem with that personally, with them saying that. I don't have a problem with them saying that, because I think they have the right to say that. What I do have a problem with is when there's the protection is for peaceable assembly, and they don't assemble peaceably, they assemble for a riot. That's what I have a problem with.
Well, if you come with automatic weapons and clubs and torches, things like that, and shields and torches, helmets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see where this is a peaceable assembly.
Then you know what you're saying is likely to incite problems. So right there, you're giving yourself away. You're expecting problems. Those are fighting words.
Yeah.
You're spewing forth.
If you're dressed for a fight, then you must be a duck.
Yeah.
Something.
That's right. I mean, if you come ready for a fight because of what you have to say, I mean, how many diplomats sit down at a table to try to come to an agreement on something, and they bring a club with them?
Well, I mean, I know whenever I have mediation in court, I usually come in, I shake the hands of the mediator, shake the hand of the other attorney, I get my briefcase, I pull out a handgun, I jam around it, and I set it on the table, and I say, all right, let's start negotiating.
Well, now that... I use the same strategy, but that's when I meet potential suitors for my daughters. I pour a glass of bourbon, and then I cock my pistol and lay it on the table and say, now, boy, where do you come from?
I don't know if I told this story or not, but when I was picking up, I think I was 17, and I was picking up a girl for a date. I'd met her before, but this was our first date because I asked her out. And so I went over to pick her up and knocked on the door. Her dad answered. He's like, well, hi there, Michael. Come on in. He goes, I was just cleaning my gun. And he literally was. He had an AK-47 that he had taken apart, and he was cleaning it at his table. And I think it was done for effect, but it was obviously lost upon me, and I had
you were like, hey, what a cool gun.
Attention. I was like, that is a great gun. Where did you get that? What kind of bullet is it? That is so cool. Can you take me shooting sometime? Like, I was not intimidated at all by it, because I think it was just, it went over my head maybe what he was doing at the time.
And he said, yeah, but you got to wear this special shirt, and it had a bullseye on the back, huh?
Yeah.
I'll take you shooting.
But I had no nefarious intent with his daughter, so maybe that helped me too.
But you think he was letting you know up front? Huh,
where I think he was, in retrospect. At the time, I mean, it was completely lost on me. I was just like, whoa, that's cool. I like that. So, there's a whole bunch of different cases and tests and how the freedom to assembly and freedom of speech in public places can be limited in different ways. And I think we probably want to get into that. But I think we probably want to maybe do maybe a full episode on the different tests and things like that, because this was kind of almost just talking about that one subject to a certain degree.
Well, with what happened, it was a global event. I mean, what happened, I guarantee you they're talking about it all over the world, not just in America, that it was something that we had to give our attention to and talk about. And I know that it's like you say, it's a slippery slope, but I just think the time has come to define what kind of country we want to be. And to, you know, because it was right before, because we've always done it that way, is that okay? I mean, what if we don't let people put forth those ideas and spread hatred? I mean, it's one thing if you say, this is what we want, But don't say that people aren't equal and that people don't have a right to be here and that people aren't the same everywhere until you live that. I mean, I'll be honest. When it comes to Confederate statues, I never gave them much thought.
I didn't either.
It didn't mean much to me. I'd see them, and I thought they were neat looking at them. And I know of the history of the Civil War, and I know that the main component of the Civil War was slavery. It wasn't the only component. There were other things that brought that about. But that is the one that is probably remembered that people will, if you say what caused the Civil War, that's probably the number one answer that 99% of the people will give.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think it probably was the cause too, for the most part. I've done a little bit of reading about the, I've read basically the statements, or maybe the manifestos, of the Confederate States as each one seceded. And I think every single one of them mentioned slavery first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that was the cause. And I think that maybe as we were brought up, we were kind of, I don't want to say brainwashed, but brought into thinking that maybe there was another reason why it was. You know, it was more about states' rights. And I think that might be a spin on it to a certain degree.
You know, the thing that always struck me when I didn't know this until I did the play 1776 several years back. There was a debate when they were, you know, doing the Declaration of Independence. Initially, Thomas Jefferson wrote in it the abolition of slavery. And of course, he was taken to task from another Southern congressman because said, "You're a slave owner yourself. How can you say that?" And he goes, "Well, I think the time has come that we recognize that it's wrong. And when I go back home, I will turn all my slaves loose. I will set them free."
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, "Well, you're ruining our economy." And he was calling the Northerners were all a bunch of hypocrites because they would trade slaves from the North to the South. They didn't use them. I mean, they didn't use slaves in the North, but they brought them in and traded them to the South for goods and services.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody was involved in it. Everybody was implicit.
One thing I came to realize too, because growing up, you know, we had Dukes of Hazzard and General Lee had the rebel flag on top, and
right,
don't think anything of it.
No,
because it didn't really affect me that way. But the thing is that it does affect a large segment of our population in a certain way,
right?
And I don't hold on to that so tight that I think I would rather just get rid of it than it offend anybody in this country or in whatever.
Well, as a white guy. That didn't register. It wasn't part of ours. And I know a lot of people call that white privilege.
Yeah.
That doesn't register. But if you're a caring human being and want it to be a better society, you've got to learn to put yourself in other people's places.
Yeah.
And when you think, if I were an African American and I look at that, would that be, you know, nothing to me then, the same as it is to me now? And I'd have to say, no, I can understand.
Yeah.
How that would be offensive.
100%.
And how you're saying, you could look at that and say, by waving that flag, you're saying you're in favor of slavery.
I mean, that's not a far reach.
Right. And that's what I mean. I can understand that. When you think that through and walk in another man's shoes, then there's no defense for it. There's no room in this society for people to preach that that's okay and use that as a symbol. It's no different than a swastika.
Well, I didn't really, looking around, I see we're both standing on soapboxes right now. I don't even know where they came from. They just both appeared and we're just kind of standing on them.
Well, I just think that this event that happened, you can stand by and you can wring your hands and say, "Oh my, I'm glad it's not me. Oh, that's bad. Those were bad people. I'm glad they go away." But the truth is, we've got to stand up and we've got to make society better. And I don't think you can just stand by and watch these things. We need to learn from. If you don't learn from your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Let's learn from these things and let's move forward.
Yeah, I'm not big on Nazis, in case you couldn't tell.
No, I don't. We always, you know.
Those are the bad guys when you're playing growing up.
Yeah, or when you had your army soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to be the Americans. You didn't want to be the Germans because you were fighting the war.
I know.
You wanted to be on the winning side.
You might be an American.
That's right.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Did you say that with us, Deanna Cox Jones? Just checking.
Why, does she like to say it?
She posted on Facebook that every time She says, am I the only one that every time the dudes say that, that I say it along with them?
I'm glad. I would hope they'd know it by now. I was hoping. I was really disappointed in Columbus that I didn't hear more of them do that. I wanted to do like, you know, sometimes the singers do when they've got singing popular songs and they hold the mic out to the audience on certain lines and they do it. I wanted us to go, now it's time for legal, and then hold the microphone out and get out them all.
Well, that's because in that whole audience of, I don't know how many were there, but only about 10 of them were there to see us, I think. Was the...
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were there for Still Buffering and Sawbones. We just benefited from the overflow.
Who are these jokers?
Yeah, I'd never seen these guys before. They didn't know the routine.
So the first legal brief term is ripeness.
Ripeness. Well, that means you got to lose before you can appeal it. You can't say they wouldn't let me do it if they haven't actually not let you do it.
And then the companion term to that is mootness. What does that mean?
Mootness means it doesn't matter. It done came and went. Yeah. You missed the boat.
So basically, if you were arguing over whether or not you could protest on May 1st, and then...
And now it's the middle of summer.
Yeah, it's moot. So the court can say, you know what? We're not going to decide that. Now, there are some exceptions to that. If the court feels that it's an issue that could present itself again, then they may go ahead and want to rule on it so to avoid having to litigate it later on if they think it's something that's like might arise again. So that's the one difference. Now, once the... this is more of a procedural type question, and this is whenever the Illinois Nazis sued the village, or they didn't sue the Village of Skokie. This is basically what the Village of Skokie did to bring the case before the court. What did they file?
They filed a writ of habeas corpus.
No. They filed a preliminary injunction.
Oh, okay.
So basically, they were seeking some sort of equitable remedy. And that's what that would be called. It would be an equitable remedy, asking the court to essentially bar them from being able to march on that day. So that's a weird kind of thing that you can do in court. You can file for a preliminary injunction. Sometimes it's done in business. So if you think like a lot of times if I hire you and I have you sign a covenant not to compete, and then you leave and try to go to a competitor of mine, I might file a preliminary injunction asking the court to enjoin you from working for that person. And the reason you file it a lot of times on an emergency basis is that there will be irreparable harm if you're allowed to do that. So rather than actually have a case on the merits on it, you file this preliminary injunction first to try to get the court to stop it right away, because you say, hey, if this takes place, there's no recovering from that. So that's why you ask for a preliminary injunction first, and that's why it's called preliminary injunction.
Well, yeah, because if they'd had the march before they could ever rule on it, then it would make it moot again.
Exactly.
It'd be a mootness.
Mootness. So, well, that's all the questions I have for legal briefs. I had a couple more, but there's some farther down in my notes we didn't even get to, so I think we're going to have to come back to more freedom of assembly.
Well, that's probably because I climbed up on my soapbox too much.
Hey, I was right there with you, brother.
But I don't know. These are just things, and I'm sure that it probably upset some people, but, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to keep dwelling on it, but I just feel like it's, you know, it equates to some of the things we've talked about, like technology.
Yeah.
You know, what, how do we cover some of these things, you know, with the changes in technology? And I believe that society is changing, and we have to look at, just because it was written 250 years ago, does that make it, do we follow that to the letter of the law? Do we have to look at where we're headed as a society and try to make this a better place for everybody to live?
I agree with you. I just think there's certain ideals we have in this country regarding freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And while I might disagree with their viewpoint, what happens in 10 years if things shift and then I'm not able to voice my viewpoint later on? And that's kind of where I'm coming from with it. And that's why I can't just wholeheartedly just say down with them.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So, you know, it's a tricky subject, but
it's a very tricky subject. To me, the whole thing was summed up. The best tweet that I saw that came out of this was by Chris Rock. Did you see the tweet he put out?
I did not, but I'm anxiously waiting to hear it.
He said, if one Nazi is walking down the street and 10 other guys join him because they think it's cool, then what you really have is 11 Nazis. And I don't like Nazis. As a matter of fact, F Nazis. So I got to agree with Chris Rock. I got to go along with that. F Nazis.
Not only F Nazis, but Nazi punks can F off. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.